تربیت میکنه.
It guides us through life.
همه چیز رو تعلیم داده.
It has taught us everything.
باید آموخت. باید فهمید.
We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
و اونگاه پیاده کردن این مفاهیم در واقعیت زندگی.
And try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
از راه قرآن.
By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من. این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیبه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم نیست.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
كتاب الله.
Good night to all listeners of Iran Radio, coming to you from Tehran. We start off this hour's lineup with Economic Divide, which airs less than a minute from now. If you are interested in economic or business issues, then this program is definitely for you. The program covers the biggest business and economic stories of the day. After that, we have Keys of Life. The program aims to introduce an Islamic lifestyle based on the book Mafatih al-Hayat, written by Ayatollah Javadi Amouli. And finally, we round up this hour's program with Muslim Lady. The program deals with a variety of subjects, all related to women. Stay with us for the next hour.
Economic Divide.
The sovereignty of a nation versus the power of the U.S. military. That is the situation that Venezuela finds itself in. The country with the richest and vast amount of natural resources like oil, gas, gold, and lithium is being targeted by the U.S., a regime change operation that has many goals in mind by removing the democratically elected president. The U.S. excuse that it is targeting drug cartels in Venezuela is not believed by anyone. What the U.S. wants from Venezuela is the removal of Maduro from power and to ultimately flood the market with Venezuelan oil and gas in order to decrease income from some of its enemies. Hi, I'm Karash Purnamati. This is The Economic Divide. Coming up in today's program, our first headline, the U.S. wants regime change in Venezuela, and it's doing that through first a massive military buildup, hoping Maduro will cede power on his own. This would be another U.S. regime change scenario in Latin America. It's common knowledge that the U.S. wants Venezuela's riches like oil and gas. But what the U.S. doesn't want the world to know is how this could potentially achieve multiple U.S. goals impacting its adversaries. U.S. sanctions on Venezuela. The U.S. has sanctioned Venezuela for much of this past decade, hoping that crippling its economy would instigate a popular uprising. But that has failed to materialize since Venezuelans have substantially overcome some of these illegal sanctions. We're going to be discussing those points and a whole lot more with Professor Peter Kuznick, director of the Nuclear Studies Institute at American University, and also Ramon Grossvogel, professor at the University of California at Berkeley, specializing in decolonial studies and political economy of the world system.
Thank you for having me on the show. The excuse that Trump and members of his administration are giving is that Venezuela is in part responsible for the drugs that are flowing into the United States, and that therefore Maduro is a narco-terrorist, and the United States, in order to protect its own national security, is destroying the boats that are carrying the drugs. This is a lie. It's total fabrication. What Trump says we're going after, the U.S. going after, is the fentanyl. Venezuela is not involved in transiting, manufacturing, producing, shipping fentanyl. The U.S. military told members of Congress that the drugs that are on some of these boats are cocaine, not fentanyl. Fentanyl is produced mostly in Mexico. So, number one, that's a lie. Number two, you don't send a vast armada and all these troops, 15,000 troops, to Venezuela, off the coast of Venezuela, to interdict drug boats. So the U.S. wants to invade Venezuela, partly because Venezuela has vast oil reserves. Some say the biggest oil reserves in the world. So that's what Trump is after. And if the U.S. is able to overthrow Maduro and take control of those oil reserves, that would have great impact not only on the world economy, but on global geopolitics.
Venezuela has suffered extreme hardship under illegal U.S. sanctions. An economic embargo has blocked Venezuela from accessing the U.S.-dominated international financial system and prevented Venezuela from exporting its oil and fixing or updating its oil infrastructure, causing government revenue to shrink by a staggering 99%, according to the top U.N. expert on sanctions, the special rapporteur Elena Duhani. However, Venezuela's economy today is in a much better state than it was previously during the previous U.S.-led attempt coup back in 2019 to 2020, which caused hyperinflation. The inflation rate has fallen a lot. Real wages have risen. Food and everyday necessities are affordable right now. The economy has dollarized a lot, however, which erodes the monetary sovereignty of the Venezuelan government.
U.S. has a number of things in mind. Number one, it wants to seize Venezuela's oil. And that would then flood the market with oil, which would lower the price of oil and therefore have a devastating impact, the U.S. figures, on Russia's economy, on Iran's economy. But also, this is the U.S. way to overthrow the government in Cuba. Cuba is dependent on inexpensive oil from Venezuela. The Cuban economy would be, which is shaky already, would be sunk by cutting off that oil from Venezuela. The U.S. biggest prize in Latin America is, and it's not exactly Latin America, but South America, would be Brazil.
Welcome back. This is the social section of the program. The first item that we are covering for you is, can you imagine what would happen to oil exports if the U.S. really achieved a regime change in Venezuela? No wonder that Russia is so nervous about what's happening there. As the U.S. renews its threats against Venezuela, authorizes a CIA operation, and mobilizes regime change rhetoric, the country is still being denied access to its own gold reserves. $1.8 billion frozen in the Bank of England. It's not about democracy. It's about control of Venezuela's old gold and lithium and punishing nations that resist the empire. The Cartel of the Suns was literally created by the CIA, also known as the Cocaine Import Agency. Max Blumenthal methodically exposes the WMD-level lies justifying U.S. attacks on Venezuela and explain the devastating consequences of a regime change war.
The big lie of this war is the Cartel of the Suns. As Ryan said, the Cartel of the Suns was literally created by the CIA, also known as the Cocaine Import Agency, to ship 22 tons of drugs into the United States in the early 90s through its main point of contact in the pre-Chavez Venezuelan National Guard, General Ramon Guillen.
Former U.S. Ambassador James Story. Maduro is sitting on top of the world's largest oil reserves, minerals that will fuel the 21st century economy, and he's in bed with our strategic competitors. It isn't about narco-trafficking, it certainly is not about democracy. It's about Monroe doctoring imperial domination to steal Venezuela's resources for U.S. corporations.
Thank you for inviting me to the program. The U.S. is in a big crisis. I would say that the U.S. empire is in a terminal crisis. They have lost the commercial wars with China in Africa and Asia. The last remaining space that they have at hand to keep their status as empire is Latin America. But however, in Latin America, they still there's still a strong presence of China in the markets and of sovereign countries that are challenging U.S. empire in the region. Venezuela is one of the richest countries in the world. It has the largest oil fields in the world. It has one of the countries with the large resources in gas. It's one of the countries with the largest resources in gold mines, in water, in minerals that are important for artificial intelligence, computers, and military industry. So it's a very wealthy country in terms of resources. And so what the U.S. is trying to do is to recover those resources as a way to recover its, come out of its own crisis. Remember, USA has a debt that is in the trillions. It's around $30 trillion with the letter T. And they need to, in a sense, do something dramatic in order to recover those resources from a rich country such as Venezuela, because the Bolivarian government has, in a sense, kept sovereignty over its economy and over its natural resources.
One similarity between Venezuela and Syria was the economic warfare waged against them by the West. The Syrian government fell in part because the US-EU Caesar sanctions had devastated the economy. Syria could not get access to hard currency and thus had very high inflation. The major difference, the Western-sponsored war on Syria, which began in 2011, the Syrian state was significantly weakened by more than a decade of war.
The U.S. has a reserve of oil in their own country for another 6 to 7 years. U.S. is now having a situation where in a very short term, they're going to have scarcity of oil. Right now, they don't have any other sources of oil like they used to have in the past, except purchasing the oil at the international markets the way they are cost today. And what they're trying to do in recovering the oil fields of Venezuela, which by the way have the largest oil reserve in the world, okay? Venezuela is the country with the largest oil reserve in the world. What they're trying to do is to have access to oil resources at a cheaper price.
Welcome back. This is the Info News section of the program. The first item that we are covering for you is the U.S. hunger. Explainer, why millions sleep on an empty stomach in the U.S., the wealthiest country on earth? On October the 31st, former U.S. President Barack Obama highlighted an issue that is largely overlooked by legacy media but widely debated inside the country. More than 47 million Americans, including 1 in 5 children, don't have reliable, affordable access to nutritious food. And as the cost of living skyrockets, more families are depending on SNAP benefits or food stamps to put food on the table, he wrote in a post on X. The next item is the EU economy. EU blames economic woes on Donald Trump, but forgets who broke the machine. Brussels is preparing to cut growth forecasts for 2026, hinting already that Trump's tariffs and trade uncertainty are dragging Europe down. A neat explanation, especially for a crisis that the EU will spend years engineering with its own hands. The same EU that proudly cut itself off from cheap Russian energy. The next item is cashing in on the Gaza genocide. Gaza war bonanza. How U.S. giants cashed in big on Israel's genocide. Donald Trump is currently seeking congressional approval of a $6.4 billion package of U.S. weapons sales to Israel, including $3.8 billion in Boeing Apache attack helicopters and $1.9 billion for 3,200 to 3,250 infantry assault vehicles. West Coast giants like Microsoft, Google, and Amazon also signed deals to provide cloud computing, AI infrastructure, and data services to the Israeli military. Cloud deals can be worth tens of millions per year per contract. Our next item is oil sales to Israel. According to a report by Oil Change International, 25 countries were responsible for shipping vast amounts of oil to Israel during its two-year Gaza offensive. Azerbaijan, Kazakhstan, Russia, and the U.S. were among the largest suppliers of oil. More than 21 million tons of crude oil and refined fuels, including jet fuel used by military aircraft. Welcome back. This is the in-depth section of the program. The U.S. wants to eliminate the drug trafficking cartels in Venezuela, or at least that is the facade that the U.S. wants other nations to believe. The U.S., in fact, wants Nicolas Maduro gone. This reasoning is slammed internationally and also by the Latin American countries. Why, you ask? It's because they don't want the same fate happening to them. During the time that President Hugo Chavez was in charge of Venezuela, economically speaking, there were many strides made under his socialist system. Let's look at this graph, for example. The unemployment rate in 1999 was 14.5%. It almost halved to 7.6% in 2009. The next item is GDP per capita. In 1999, it was $4,105, while in 2011 it was $10,000, more than $10,000. The currency, let's look at this graph as well, and the inflation, the average consumer prices back in 1999 was 23.6%. In 2012, it was 31.6%. The next item that we are going to have is the extreme poverty rate. In 1999, it was 23.4%. But in 2011, it was 8.5% under Hugo Chavez. And the final one that we are going to have right here is oil exports, the nominal net rates. In 1999, it was $14.4 billion, while in 2011, $60 billion in revenue. The next item is a snapshot of the major sectors of the economy, which dates back to over a decade ago. It's interesting that oil exports back in 2008 were over $43 billion, to have been reduced to $8.62 billion. The U.S. sanctions on the country were a major factor in low GDP per capita, of course, confidence in the government, and of course, inflation, which exploded to unprecedented levels, as you can see. Now, let's bring in our guest, Professor Peter Kuznick, director of the Nuclear Studies Institute at American University. Professor, is the U.S. flexing muscles against Venezuela to project power over Latin American countries, that if they don't follow the U.S. foreign policy here, they are going to suffer the same fate?
The U.S. is sending a message to all of Latin America, and as it's been sending to the rest of the world. When Trump talked at the beginning about invading Panama, invading Canada, invading Greenland, we saw who he is and what he represents. He said he wants the Nobel Peace Prize and deserves it. I'm the person who nominated last year's winner for the Nobel Peace Prize, the Japanese anti-nuclear group, survivor group, Nihon Hidankyo. I was part of their delegation in Oslo. The only prize that Trump deserves is the biggest warmonger, biggest fascist enabler on the planet right now.
Now, this graph right here shows the extent that the U.S. sanctions affected the Venezuelan economy. In 1999, $334 billion was the GDP of Venezuela, and during Maduro's time, it was reduced down to $68,216,000, a result of harsh U.S. sanctions which cut off Venezuela from the world financial system. The next item looks at the year 2008. Things started to improve for Maduro and his government, and here are the improvements seen in different sectors as reflected in the GDP, which is a drastic improvement compared to figures just a couple of years ago. The economic indicators here shows the improvements. Notice GDP coming in at positive 3%, with inflation caught dramatically, quite an improvement from what it was previously. The economy's rebound was due to adjusting to sanctions, domestic production, and help from countries like Russia, Iran, and China. And repairing oil infrastructure allowed oil production to rise above 1 million barrels per day, bringing in more hard currency. One of the lesser known facts is that the U.S. has, throughout its history, attacked sovereign Latin American countries on many occasions, over 50 times, and wanting regime change or coups to lead to regime change. That is why many of the Latin American countries are against the U.S. warmongering policies, in this case, against Venezuela. Now let's bring in our other guest, Roman Grossvogel, professor at the University of California at Berkeley. Professor, can it be concluded that Donald Trump is after the oil and gas, not only for economic benefits for the U.S., but to be able to control the oil market against countries like in Latin America who are not subservient to the U.S. demands?
USA is trying to destroy the Bolivarian government, and they want to, which is right now the wall that is putting obstacles for the U.S. to have full control over the governments and the economy of the region. Right now, they are in an offensive to destroy all the governments that used to have some kind of sovereignty and claims against U.S. empire. For example, the Correa government in Ecuador was destroyed. The Kirchner's and Fernandez government in Argentina was destroyed. Now the Bolivia government was also, this has been destroyed recently. And now the main country left right now with wealth resources is Venezuela.
As of November the 23rd, the U.S. has announced a new phase of military aggression against Venezuela, with so many U.S. officials saying that the U.S. is very much prepared for a new round of actions against Venezuela. By the time this program is aired, the U.S. may have launched an attack on Venezuela. The U.S. pressure to oust Maduro from power appears to be a definitive goal. Why would a military buildup in the Caribbean underway for months and Trump to have authorized covert CIA operations? It may be just a matter of time before there is an invasion or targeting of sites inside Venezuela. I'm Kyarash Bunamati, and I'll see you next week.
morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadin wa ali baytihi al-tayyibin al-tahirin. Brothers, sisters, listeners. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to the program Mafatihul Hayat, Keys of Life. I am your host, Abdullah Al-Musawi. We were talking about the Islamic State, or an Islamic system, or any system. First thing that we need to have in that system is a ruler. And we said that ruler has duties he needs to fulfill. And among the duties that a ruler needs to have, which we ended with yesterday, is that he needs to give people hope. And he needs to make sure people are saved in times of calamities and times of problems. And allow me to add something here. Maybe I forgot to mention in the previous episode in this regard. We have a ziyarah, the ziyarah Arba'een for Imam Hussein, on the 40th of Imam Hussein. There's a specific ziyarah that shred in that day. We talk about Imam Hussein, we say, وَبَدَلَ مُحْجَتَهُ فِيكَ. Oh Allah, Imam Hussein, he gave his life for your sake. Why? لِيَسْتَنْقِذَ عِبَادِكَ مِنَ الْجَهَالَةِ وَحَيْرَةُ الضَّلَالَةِ. He gave his life to save your servants from ignorance and from being misguided and lost. So sometimes a leader comes to a stage where he needs to sacrifice himself for his own people, for their guidance. This is what Imam Hussein alayhi salam did. Moving on, the third duty in our list that a ruler and a leader needs to have is, in fact, to keep his doors open for people. They need to understand people, listen to people, understand their problems, understand their issues, work with them to help them make it better. That's the job that was given to them. You being a leader, not being a king. You are there to serve people. Imam Sadiq Salamullah Ali says, when a leader or a person who's in charge and he takes care of people and he becomes just and opens his doors to them, and he removes the curtains, which is usually placed between the kings and people, and he looks into the affairs of people and takes care of their affairs and listens to them, he says Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala on day of judgment will take care of that person, and he would not make him feel the fear of a day of judgment, and he will enter him and admits him to heaven. That's it. Do the opposite and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will throw that person in hellfire. Let us take a short break and then we will come back.
Ayatollah Javadi Amiri, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes.
یه جلدش هی مفاتی الجنان است چه فرون دماغ و سواب داره فرون روزون
One volume, the present volume, مفاتیح الجنان, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc.
یه جلدش کم داره و اینه که فرون درخت کاری اینجا کم سواب داره دعا هم داره سواب هم داره
But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree.
امام اونطوری که اینو گفته بودم گفته دیگه اون امامی که گفته اگر روزه بگیری ثواب داره همون امام گفته که اگر درخت بکاری اون ثواب داره.
Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam who has stressed out the reward for praying has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree.
محیط زیست نگه سالم نگه داره این دو ثواب داره.
There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment.
وقتی میخوای کشاورزی کنی یه قدر گندم بگیر رو به قبله بیست این دعا رو بخون اینم همون امام گفته دیگه
When growing wheat take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Mafatih al-Hayat, Keys of Life. Another duty the rulers and kings and whoever is in power needs to have is they need to work on themselves in terms of tazkiyah, purification, and in terms of cultivating the ethics and morals within themselves. That's a duty that they need to have, because when they stay away and far from that, then the system will collapse. Their egos will come into place. Their greed and selfishness, they will become narcissistic in their approach unless they work on themselves. Imam Ali alayhi salam, he says, من نصب نفسه للناس إماما. Whoever place himself as a leader to people. And mind you, brothers, sisters, we're not just talking about presidents and kings and rulers. This also concerns you and me. When we are placed in a group, in a family, because we begin with a family, right? And then we make it our way up. These are requirements even for you and me. So the Imam says, whoever places himself in a place of leadership for people, فَلْيَبْدَأْ بِتَعْلِيمِ نَفْسِهِ قَبْلَ تَعْلِيمِ غَيْرِهِ. Let him begin by teaching himself before he goes and teaches people. وَلْيَكُنْ تَأْدِيبُهُ بِسِيرَتِهِ قَبْلَ تَأْدِيبِهِ بِلِسَانَهِ. Let him teach people by his akhlaq, by his way of life, before he can teach them with his tongue. Which means that you need to apply and practice the Islamic laws that you already know. You let people see you practice these things. That's how people learn. Like children, when we were children, we would look at our parents, whatever they do, we mimic them, we copy them. And that's how we learned a lot of things in our lives. We have to do the same thing for people when we are in position of power. And he says, قَبْلَ تَأْدِيبِهِ بِلِسَانَهِ. Before you start using your tongue to teach people, وَمُعَلِّمُ نَفْسِهِ وَمُؤَدِّبُهَا. You have to become the teacher, the mentor of your nafs, of your soul, and the one that teaches it. Which means you constantly need to be teaching yourself. أَحَقُّ بِالْإِجْلَالِ مِنْ مُعَلِّمِ النَّاسِ. Those who teach themselves and take care of themselves, these should be honored more than normal teachers and those who educate people. So the idea is, when it comes to dealing with people and being in charge of people, you need to make sure that you're constantly and always working on yourself. Because tazkiyah is not a one-day job. It's a lifetime job. And therefore, we see in chapter Shams, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala swears in surah Shams 11 times before he makes the following statement. قَدْ أَفْلَحَ مَنْ زَكَّاهَا وَقَدْ خَابَ مَنْ دَسَّاهَا. Successful is he who purifies it. Therefore, there is a requirement on the leaders and rulers to constantly, daily, sometimes maybe every couple of hours, to check in with themselves, and they see that they're not ruling and being in charge of people for their own desires, rather for the betterment of the people around them. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams. Hear the children's screams.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A moment.
solitary motion, space spent in time, in time.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special, and I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear ladies. Welcome back to a new episode of your very favorite Muslim lady. This is Asma. I have the honor to be your host, and again, I have the pleasure to be at the service of Sister Zainab.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming here. I would like you to give us a very brief introduction about yourself for those people who have just joined us.
All right. I'm Turfatul Zainab Askari, and I am from Kashmir, which is under Indian administration. And I have been living in Iran for some past 9 years now. And I have studied a master's in linguistics, and I have I'm also engaged in the Hausa studies, and at the same time I'm teaching.
Very perfect. Well, in my interaction with other people, there's something that is very important. How to get that I am actually involved in a toxic relationship. This is a very important matter to realize and understand. What are the key signs to recognize that I am being a part of a toxic relationship? I am actually involved and included in a toxic relationship. How can I get into that recognition?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. There are a lot of signs a person can educate themselves about, and with the help of these signs, they can know that if they are in a toxic relationship, and at the same time, if they are, they should get out of this as soon as possible. For example, the people who are toxic, they exhibit possessiveness and control over you. This is one of the signs, like, you know, a controlling person in your family or in your friends, who dictates your choices, who dictates your behavior or relationships, or they mask their behavior as a concern. Okay, for example, say there are two friends in the university, and one...
We have had this discussion. There are some complaints about women sleeping more than required. Actually, the complaint is done by whom? The men. So, but is it really like that? Like, women tend to sleep more than men, and then that would start to create issues in their life?
Many men do feel frustrated over this issue.
But is it really true that women sleep more than men?
Yes, research has shown that women...
Then the researcher is a man.
...need more sleep than men. And it also shows the cases that women tend to sleep slightly longer than men by just over 11 minutes.
Oh.
That was interesting for me while I was researching on the topic.
The whole research is very interesting.
Yeah.
From the very basic presumption that says women sleep more than men.
Yeah. So in addition to the biological differences like the hormone production, there's also this gender-based difference that can affect how much sleep a person basically needs to get. Researchers that have documented differences in the amount of time men and women dedicate to their sleep, or paid and unpaid labor, also work and social responsibilities, and family and caregiving. This is all that impacts how much sleep you basically need.
Mm-hmm.
So women are more likely to wake up and take care of others in the home, a task which disrupts their sleep. Sleep disruptions in on one hand, she needs more sleep. But on the other hand, she has to take off.
She gets very less.
She's a caretaker.
She's a caretaker. She goes out for work.
Yeah.
She has to wake up very early. And then when she comes home, she's the last person who sleeps.
Yeah, the overall sleep quality is disturbed, basically.
Yeah, and then finally what happens is that the women sleep more than men.
Yeah, but do actually women need more sleep than men? Yes, even if they spend more time, like we said, 11 minutes, mm-hmm. they sleep longer than men, but they experience fragmented sleep. Like,
exactly.
You know?
Sporadic sort of a sleeping.
It's a worse quality sleep.
Yeah.
Which is...
I guess I'm suffering from that as well.
Yeah.
You know what's the problem? The quality of sleeping becomes very low, like...
Especially in caring women, I would say.
Yeah. Whenever I sleep, I do not get into the very depth of sleeping. It doesn't go so deep into sleeping, and I'm all the time alert. So actually, there are some people whom I guess would suffer from the very same thing, like me. Like, their sleeping does not get into the very depth of sleeping. Yeah. And the slightest noise can break my sleep and bring me back into reality.
Yeah. Many are some issues that need to be treated medically, but I think the most underlying issue is the increased sense of caregiving responsibilities and to get up during the night when compared to men. Like, women are 40% more likely to experience insomnia, and they are twice as likely to have restless leg syndrome, which you were talking about, and more prone to poor sleep due to chronic pain sometimes, because like women go through a lot of issues, pregnancy stage, sometimes through menstrual cycles, sometimes through menopause, and sometimes through a lot of issues, like sometimes through hormonal imbalances and a lot of things. So because women perceive and report their sleep problems differently than men, sleep disorders often go misdiagnosed or sometimes undiagnosed. Like, for example, if had we not been talking about this topic right now, maybe you would have not said, maybe I also face the same problem.
Yeah.
That's why, like, it goes undiagnosed sometimes. So if you feel like you're not getting enough quality sleep, speak up and describe your symptoms. So sleep is essential for, rejuvenation and maintaining health.
Exactly. So since sleeping is very important in our life, and specifically for women, it must be a practice in the best way possible, just as the result of the factors that I mentioned for you. Let's go for a break and then come back to see how could we get into better sort of sleeping. Welcome back. This is Muslim Lady, and we were talking about an interesting topic, that is sleeping. Well, it's interesting as long as you could have a perfect sleeping and there are no distractions. But as I just said, many people, they're out there that are suffering from lack of sleep.
Yeah.
So in order for them to get a better sleep, in order to avoid other problems and consequences to come, what would you suggest?
I would suggest relax. Take a chill pill.
Which is very easy, and I can practice it.
Go for wuzu, perform a wuzu, and then recite some of the verses. Have tawakkul in Allah and go to sleep. All your problems, all your tasks you're going to do now at this time, you can wake up early in the morning and do them at that time. And which is much better if you get up in the
other
part of the night. Yeah.
We can talk about this in another episode, because if I want to tell you the number of the strategies we take in order to solve the issue, but it does not work, then it would take us too many minutes and hours. So if we skip that now, we imagine that my sleeping quality is perfect and everything is okay. Why the discussion of sleeping in a family gets an importance, and why do we have to go through it?
Yes, a man especially has to educate himself about the psychological factors that affect women's sleep. The articles, the books, the videos, the sleep science, can provide him valuable insights. He should go through it because of women. Because many men complain like she's only sleeping, or we have divorce cases because of this. But a man should educate himself on the note that there are biological differences, there are hormonal fluctuations. She's going through a lot of things, like I said, menstrual cycle, pregnancies, menopause. All these things do affect sleep patterns. Hormonal changes lead to fatigue, increased sleep needs.
So how could she manage them?
For example, let me give an example. When I was a child, I was raised seeing something very beautiful in my home. Like, my father used to make breakfast, which was very unusual in our culture. And then we would question our father why. And then he would say, your mother is a woman. Do not interrupt her sleep. She's been working all day long. So
I'm such a very kind father.
Yeah. Let me do this for her. And like, unfortunately, I grew up with the same expectation. And when I entered like my house, and then but my husband was irritated with this. Like, if
he was raised with a different perspective.
Yeah, if I sleep 5 minutes extra than him, and he would be like, why? All the unnecessary questions will, make a question mark in his mind. But I openly communicated with him that when you do not let me sleep even 5 minutes more than you, I feel disrespected. I have always grown up seeing my father making breakfast. If you happen to wake up early someday than me, do this effort, go and make a breakfast for yourself. Or if you can't see me sleeping for more than 5 minutes, you do sleep for 10 more minutes.
I guess this episode must be heard by men.
Yeah.
It's more exclusively for men. Because they have to understand.
Yeah, it's basically like there are so many social factors, societal expectations that caregiving roles of a woman, and which ultimately leads to sleep deprivation. And then she has to face a lot of problems. Like, when women are able to find time for themselves, they can only then prioritize their sleep as a necessary form of self-care.
And by the way, just as you were saying all these stuff and factors, I remembered something. In many movies and even in the newspapers sometimes, as the complaints are reported, we see that sleeping is mental mechanism.
Yeah.
It would reject all the realities you don't want to see.
Yeah.
In order to fight them back, you go to sleep. So when a woman sleeps a lot, you have to search it in yourself. Search
exactly.
The answer in yourself.
Say, Alhamdulillah, she's fighting a lot of things to sleep. Yeah, you know? And when you understand that, when you educate yourself on that note as a man, this shows your empathy. This shows your support. And understand that women may have different sleep needs due to various factors. So give them compassion rather than frustration.
Mm-hmm.
So
and all the time accusing them for sleeping. Why do you sleep so much? Why?
Rather promote a balanced distribution of household and parenting responsibilities. Do you want her to go ahead with the household chores right now or the parental responsibilities? You do some. Okay?
Exactly.
May Allah enlighten you with more and more knowledge on that. Like, when men participate more equally in these tasks, it can alleviate some of the stress that she has been, that has been leading to increased sleep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and encourage self-care, encourage women to prioritize their self-care.
So
and
I guess there are two sides to what we just discussed. For the complaint that you were just saying, many men complain that women sleep so much, their wives actually sleep so much. I guess there's one part that is the man who has to understand.
He has to educate himself.
The differences and educate themselves. And also the woman. She has to take care of herself in the best way possible. Like, I don't know, exercising, going to gym, taking care of herself, taking some pills, like maybe some vitamins are lacking.
I would add this point necessarily. There was this woman who would do each and every task, from tutioning her kids, from doing household chores, from driving her kids to school and doing so much, having those less sleep patterns while the body needed more. And ultimately, she was diagnosed with cancer.
Oh, my God.
And then she dies within a span of 40 days. Okay, you're not a superwoman who has to necessarily to be doing each
you're
and everything.
You're not a Wonder Woman. You don't have to do everything by yourself.
Yes, just encourage self-care. Give some time to yourself.
Take care of your body.
Right.
Take care of your mental health. Sleep well. And then
especially at night. Especially at, and we also have this small snap kind of thing during the day. And in very strange it was for me, and I came across a hadith where it was said that only devils do not have a small snap. So humans should go for that small
Yeah, your brain
snap.
Must go for just recharge.
Yeah.
Like, let's call it that way. So it has to rest for a bit. This was all for today's episode. I hope you have just enjoyed it. May you always stay healthy mentally and physically. And this was all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I know I'm waiting for something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges.